Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
January 27, 2019. I'm going to begin with something that I really want to make an important point on. It's kind of something that I have to routinely make a point on with the kind of things that I talk about. But we have a lot of important things to get into today in regard to some new people involved in what's going on with Venezuela and their history. And it's not necessarily new. It happened a day or so ago, a couple days, I believe. But it's irrelevant to the larger discussion of what I'm going to get into today. Some changes in regard to the diplomats in regard to Venezuela. Some shifting of policy in regard to whether or not the U.S. is actually leaving Syria. As well as Israeli involvement in all of that. And interestingly enough, a kind of rise of an opposition movement to the Yellow Vests, which seems all, as far as I can tell, entirely orchestrated. We'll get into all of that today, so make sure you stay tuned all the way to the end. But I'm going to begin, as I said, with something that I think is, it's basically with the things that I talk about. I get attacked a lot for being un-American. Now, I'm going to talk about a comment that I received real quick, and then we'll jump right into this. And it's not necessarily to put this person on blast. The point is, this is very relevant, especially to what we're going to talk about today. Now, again, I'm not trying to put this person on blast. Now, there is indeed an important point that needs to be made here. Now, with what I talk about generally on this show, exposing the truth about the government, and with what I'm going to get into in general, it's important for those new to the show, because I know the ones that watch regularly are well aware of this, but new to the show, to understand the difference between criticizing the government and hating America, as these comments all too often accuse me of. So you can see this comment says, "I hope you're not an American. You certainly don't sound like one." And I said, to imply that every American should sound the same or have the same opinion is just about the most ignorant thing I've ever seen written on this channel. You have forgotten what this country was founded on. You, sir, have forgotten what it means to be an American. Now, given maybe I came across a little too harsh, but I was getting a lot of this all at the same time. He replied by, "Yeah, maybe, but when a so-called American trashes America, then the real Americans get offended by that, especially when that person spends their time inciting others to hate America as well, which you all know that's not at all what I do on this channel." To which I replied, "You are clearly confusing the government with America, or the United States, and I am in no way inciting anyone to hate anything, as anyone actually listening to what I have to say will clearly recognize. I am simply asking people to, in general, to begin asking questions and showing them the true nature of those who have stolen this country. You are just a modern example of a propagandized, blindly subservient American. This country was literally founded on speaking truth to power. It is quintessentially American to question and criticize, if necessary, the actions of those in power. And here you stand quibbling about how un-American I am because I choose to fight for your rights that you do not even realize are being taken away. The only Americans that get offended by what I do are the ones so blind to what is going on that they do not even realize that they now think the government is America. You are America. The people are America. Not some ruling class oligarchs that have so many like yourself brainwashed with jingoistic commercials and halftime displays. Wake up." Now, I just felt like that was incredibly relevant to start the show today. The reality of the fact that I love this country. And by this country, I mean you as Americans that are watching, as well as the world and everybody else. I'm a citizen of the earth. But I do genuinely believe in the tenets that this country was founded on, whether or not they were ever really, because I've made the argument that people in the beginning of this country even had ideals to make it exactly as it is today. Regardless, those classic concepts have rooted in the hearts of people like myself, and I believe they can do good. But the problem is that people like that have become so aggressive to people that simply talk about the true nature of these people. Look at what they've done. Oh, you hate America. And I'm talking about the government. And I just found that to be incredibly important to talk about today. Now, before I get into the first main topic, I wanted to do a quick follow-up on something. We were recently talking just yesterday about YouTube's new algorithm change that will no longer be recommending conspiracy theories or borderline content. And I found the point I was making was how ridiculous it is, how many, quote, conspiracy theories all of a sudden turn out to be true and no one says a word. We just pretend like, oh yeah, that's just that we learned that now, didn't you know? Well, here's another one that just came out today. Something that we've been talking about for a very long time. That says, freely admitted, or finally admitted, new tech can beam voices directly into your head. This coming from MIT. And this is an actual, straight up, they put this out saying this is a new technology they're using to be able to transmit audio directly into someone's ear, or, you know, basically speak into their head. So you're hearing something with nobody around. Now, whether or not this is, it existed before and this is a new thing, which I highly doubt, and again, that's the real point there, is that's not the case, as they point out in this article, is this goes back decades, talking about voice-to-school technology, or the voice of God, which CIA has admitted multiple times. As they point out in the show as well, it used to be considered a form of schizophrenia to think that the government was constantly keeping tabs on you. And well, in fact, that's just the reality of the day. That's what we're living in today, and no one can deny that. But yet they used to literally lock people up because they were crazy because they thought that back then. So just think about the ridiculousness of YouTube today saying conspiracy theories are now off the table. We're going to make sure that people don't see them, and they say that they're not going to recommend them. But we know what that means. They're going to get buried. You're going to get essentially shadow banned because most people today simply just look at their recommended videos anyway. But this is a very alarming setup. Now, it actually goes on to point out that there's even some technology in these same documents that show that they basically just label it hearing device, very ambiguous, and then go into this really bland explanation about using sounds to put, you know, using technology to put words in people's in heads of mammals with, you know, really ambiguous. But then you can see clearly there's a person's head in the diagram. So it's not just any mammal, they're finding out how to put words inside people's heads. And this goes back decades. And so now all of a sudden we have the new technology and it's a brand new thing MIT is admitting and hooray. The point being, yet another conspiracy theory turning out to be true. So here we are, as YouTube is cracking down on conspiracy theories. I thought that was incredibly relevant. So let's get to the big stuff today. Now this is the first article of the day. This is something that I thought was pretty interesting. Somebody shared this with me, and just their hypocrisy just seems to know no bounds. This coming from RT, Congresswoman who fixed Democratic primary for Clinton, now, quote, fixing democracy for Venezuela. It's just, I had a good laugh at that. It's just, it's ridiculous to me that this is the kind of thing that we're seeing. And that's Debbie Wasserman Schultz. As they begin the article, regime change and foreign interventions are things that the two U.S. ruling parties agree on, regardless of how much they exchange blows at home. Venezuela is the latest place where Republicans and Democrats have found common ground. Now, the House Foreign Affairs Committee has even offered a simple explanation on how a, quote, dream team of Democrats have prepared a package of laws, which will ensure Venezuela's transition into a better future. Debbie Marcosel Powell, member of the U.S. House of Representatives from Florida's 26th district, will be bringing humanitarian aid. Donna Shalal, a member of the U.S. House of Representatives from Florida's 27th district, Florida, both of them, will stop the arming of Maduro's thugs and batons with tear gas, while none other than Debbie Wasserman Schultz gets arguably the hardest task of all, taking on Russia's President Vladimir Putin. Because, of course, we all know that he's deeply involved in this. Now, the one who, according to the current dogma of the American left establishment, already denied the Democrats the presidency in 2016, as we all know, and whose puppet Donald Trump is currently trying to topple the Venezuelan government for some reason that only a five-dimensional chess master can understand. It was very fun, very humorously written. Now, interestingly, as Jimmy Dore recently pointed out, so Trump is a Russian puppet, as they say, right? They stole the election, even though it's not at all what happened. But they claim he's a Russian puppet, yet he's carrying out a coup against Venezuela that Russia is clearly not for. They're against it. So if you're against the coup in Venezuela, you're a Russian stooge. But if you support Trump in the overthrowing of the Venezuelan government, well, you support Trump, so you're a Russian stooge. So basically, either way, you're a Russian stooge. You lose either way you go. This is what I'm talking about these selectively applied narratives. These people, it's humorous. And very scary, actually, that people cannot recognize their own contradictions. Now, Wasserman Schultz was forced to resign as the chair of the Democratic National Committee after leaked documents revealed how she was involved. The entire group rigged the primary in favor of Hillary Clinton and against Bernie Sanders in 2016. Now, for those that may balk at that, that is 100% proven. They actually went to court and said, well, we had the right to do that. So it's on the record 100%. This is what happened. They ignored what the people wanted. They put Hillary in place anyway. And then they simply just testified that they had the right to do so. They're not obligated to do what the people say in the primary, which is ridiculous, which technically is the law on the books because that's the way they made it. But it's 100% undemocratic and not at all what the people thought they were being involved in. Now, in the irony, it says, of Wasserman Schultz now being on the front line of bringing democracy to Venezuela, didn't go unnoticed by Jill Stein, the head of the Green Party. Now, I'm not necessarily a fan of Jill Stein. There's a lot, probably more than you would think, that I disagree with her on. But this tweet is actually really humorous. She says, incredible, a video about bringing democracy to Venezuela, starring the person who rigged the 2016 DNC primary and ripped off millions of American voters. Hey, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, how about you fix elections in Broward County, Florida, before trying to help other countries? Very, very well put. Speaking of having issues with illegal voting and everything going on, it's ridiculous that this is the focus today. And it is. It's something that I actually, I can't believe that people can't recognize the absurd hypocrisy and contradictions inherent in everything that's going on today. But I know a lot of you do, and that's probably why you're here. But moving on to a related story, the first few are all in the same vein here, this coming from Zero Hedge, Venezuela's highest-ranking military attaché flips on Maduro, urges armed forces to recognize Guaido. Now, this is an interesting story because this is Zero Hedge reporting on this, but it's coming from the Miami Herald. Now, this is essentially mainstream media selling you something that sounds big and fancy, but when you really understand that an attaché is basically someone who works for an ambassador. So, not a very big deal, if you want my opinion. But as it says, Venezuela's top military attaché at Washington, D.C. embassy has broken with Nicolas Maduro on Saturday, calling it the regime, of course, and has urged other members of the Venezuelan armed forces to recognize Juan Guaido as the legitimate interim president. And it goes on and on and on to say all the same rhetoric that we've seen from and we would expect from the mainstream media. But here's something that I found that I thought was interesting, where basically, you know, an attaché versus, you know, a military chief. Whereas the Independent reports, Venezuela military chief declares loyalty to Maduro and warns U.S. not to intervene. Now, what I'm seeing in general is that the vast majority of the military, almost entirely, is still on the side of Maduro. And without that changing, we're not going to see a real coup unless the U.S. decides to outright invade the country. So most people are basically saying that the coup's failed. It's over. I don't think so. I think we're going to continue to see this pressure. We're going to continue to see U.S. sanctions starving people to death. So we'll have to see how it goes forward. But clearly the military, as of yet, as of today, is still on Maduro's side. But the nature of the way they're doing this is trying to put these little pieces out there to get the attention of possibly the military themselves to think maybe we should flip. Maybe we should, you know, take that $20 million that Pompeo just gave Guaido and we can start our own government. They're trying to entice them to flip. Has nothing to do with democracy. As we continue to point out, what's currently happening here is literally the opposite of democratic. But the military chief Pardino said himself, quote, I warned the people that there was a coup underway against our democracy and our president Nicolas Maduro. As soldiers, we work for peace and not for war. He said, quote, those of us who lived through the coup of 2002, that the U.S. was involved in, have it etched into our minds. We thought we'd never see it again, but we saw it yesterday. You know, very revealing. But of course, he's a dictator stooge because he's on the side of Maduro. Of course, that's just a given today for people that don't want to hear all of the information we try to present on this show. Now, again, I never am even saying that I know that that's not the case. I'm simply saying that there is massive evidence to suggest the opposite. And if you're willing to ignore all of that in favor of some career liars that say this is the case, trust me, then there's a clear problem there. Because that's all it roots to. Everything that's coming from the side of the how bad Venezuela is and all the things you're hearing about why we should invade and overthrow the country, or rather, you know, fund a coup, is all coming from people's statements that are in the intelligence or in the government of the United States. And then opposition leaders that they fund and control. And then people that, you know, oh yeah, a person I met online said they're there and it's so real. But those that watch my recent show know that a lot of that can be easily passed off as, we can find cases of these people pretending they're there when they're not, and on and on. The case I just showed was the girl that a week before it all happened, she was in France. Oh, I got my new apartment. And then a week later, her tweet is saying, I'm starving to death. Everybody come help me. It's ridiculous. Moving on to the next one. Maduro folds under siege, allows the U.S. diplomats to stay. Now, I think the headline is a little bit misleading, essentially, because of the way that this went down. But ultimately, he is bending and saying that he's going to allow them to stay. But there's more to the story. Now, Maduro has revised his demands to give time for negotiations in what he said is in a televised statement, in his opinion, was an act of true diplomacy. Now, again, they'll balk at that, but the reality of what they continue to paint him as, this mindless villain that's just killing people and starving people to death and stealing money, but then yet is willing to go to the UN and talk. He's willing to create, to give time for negotiations with the country that's trying to overthrow him. Doesn't seem like something that would do. They would probably just say that he is, you know, fearful and worried that stuff's going to happen, but except he's got the backing of the entire military. So it doesn't really add up. Now, instead, now he's offering the White House 30 days to negotiate for the establishment of, quote, U.S. interests office in Caracas and a mere institution for the Venezuelans in Washington, which I can almost guarantee they're going to flat out turn down. And it goes on to say, quote, now is the time for we just talked about this yesterday. Mike Pompeo speaking in basically about Venezuela as he has his little tour of the pro-regime change tour had said, now is the time for every other nation to pick a side at the UN Security Council meeting and also and everywhere else. Basically, he said, no more delays, no more games. Either you stand with the forces of freedom or you're in league with Maduro and his mayhem. Now, this absurdly narrow-minded, hyper-polarized projection. Similar, actually, that made me think of the, you know, either you're with us or you're with the terrorists. The W. Bush, George W. Bush statement after 9/11, right? The ridiculous nature of, if you're not fighting our war on an idea, then we're going to fight you, basically, is what he's saying. It's the same kind of concept he's making there. And this is what they do, these ultimatums to the world. This is U.S. policy. Now, during the United Nations Security Council session, the Russian ambassador to the UN, it's Vasily Nebenzia, came to Maduro's defense, accusing Washington of treating Latin America as, it, quote, as its backyard with no regard to the interest of people living there. And of course, as I pointed out the other day, because Russia is backing them, that's almost counterproductive. Truly, because people are so aggressively propagandized about Russia, they go, oh, Russia support all of them. That means that just shows me that there's a problem there, which is, you know, a false equivalency. But Ambassador Nebenzia slammed the Trump administration for trying to, quote, engineer a coup, which point of fact we know, or not point of fact, which is a fact we know is the case. The Wall Street Journal did a report. We know this stuff has happened. They've been talking about it for years, if not longer. They completely engineered this. They told Guaido what to do and said, do this and we'll back you. It's on record. This is what happened. Now, Russia has further described as absurd and, quote, childlike, a new ultimatum issued by Britain, Germany, and France and Spain for Maduro to call fresh elections within 8 days, demanding you better call new elections within 8 days or else they'll recognize Guaido and stand alongside the United States. This, according to Reuters. Which is ridiculous. And he's not going to do that. First of all, they're doing this in order to point to the fact that he didn't, as if that somehow makes him illegitimate. This is all, this is this leaps of logic that they create. This is how they do things every time. Now, also worrisome concerning the potential for serious escalation at Pompeo's side for the United Nations Security Council meeting in New York was none other than Elliot Abrams, notably who pled guilty during the Iran-Contra scandal. He named the day prior as the U.S. Special Representative for Venezuela, which for many represents the Trump administration's going, as they put it, gloves off in what appears a return to Cold War era policy of aggressive, covert, and military means to effect regime change in Latin America. Now, given Abrams' checkered past, this seems like a very alarming step. Now, let's talk about that. For those that may not know, let's get into this for a second, because this is an important topic. This is coming from the New York Times at the time. Elliot Abrams admits his guilt on two counts of Contra cover-up in the Iran-Contra scandal. Now, this is really important to understand that we're talking about a previous time, an illegal regime change attempt And he pled guilty in covering this up, lying to the American people. And now this is the man, the point man, apparently, on what's going on in Venezuela. How it's just, there are so many examples of why we're being lied to that it makes my head spin, and people can't recognize this. Some people. But so this man is a criminal. He's a war criminal, an actual verifiable convicted war criminal. And now here's another one where, guess what? After the fact, after that, a little over a year later, while this convicted war criminal was serving his time, he was pardoned by Bush. H.W. Bush. How nice of them to continually cover for each other. You know, you get caught with a gram of weed in your pocket and you're in jail for 20 years. This man murders people and covers up a massive regime change crime and lies to the American people. Oh, well, you know, just get him out. He's one of us. Just think about that. You know, it's really frustrating to see this develop, and it's the same thing. Now, this is, you're looking at the government's new point man, the new point man to Venezuela to handle, as Pompeo put it, the escalating crisis of Venezuela. Pompeo also said, quote, "I am incredibly excited to announce that a seasoned, principled, and tough-minded foreign policy veteran is joining our State Department team. Elliott's passion for the rights and liberties of all peoples makes him a perfect fit and a valuable and timely addition." You know, just blatantly lying, which is his way. Everything I've seen him, heard him say in the last so many months has been a blatant lie about the Middle East, about all this stuff. They just open, like, easily verifiable lies. Now, let's take a look for a moment those that may think I'm wrong, right? Oh, you're wrong. You're misreading it. Well, let's take a look at Elliot Abrams' highlights from U.S. government foreign policy. So in 1993, after a UN Truth Commission, which examined 22,000 atrocities that occurred during a 12-year civil war in El Salvador, attributed 85% of the abuses to the Reagan-assisted right-wing military and its death squad allies, Assistant Secretary of State for Human Rights Elliot Abrams said, quote, "The administration's record on El Salvador is one of fabulous achievement." Lovely. Abrams organized the illegal covert financing of Contra rebels in Nicaragua behind the back of Congress, which had cut off funding. Mind you, that means Congress said no more funding for your regime change war. So they went behind their backs. And this is the story that relates to Gary Webb and the whole story, you know, the man who apparently shot himself twice in the head, you know, suicide that they deemed it. This is the story broke about that, but basically selling drugs on the black market to fund the Contra rebels in attempted revolution against Nicaragua. They recently tried another revolution against Nicaragua and it failed. This is classic foreign policy. You can't ignore this stuff while looking at what's happening in Venezuela. Lying, selling drugs, going behind the back of Congress and the American people, and killing a lot of people in the process. Now, Abrams also lied to Congress twice about his role with the Contras. He pleaded guilty to both counts, as I said, and was also pardoned by Bush, as I said. Now, Abrams, a decade later after that, while working as special Middle East advisor to former President George W. Bush, Abrams was an enthusiastic advocate for the, guess what, disastrous Iraq invasion. Just like Bolton, they stand by it. Oh, it was a great thing. We need to save those people, even though we killed a million of them. Ridiculous. Now, Abrams was in the Bush White House at the time of the abortive coup in 2002 against, guess who, the late Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. Funny how that works, how he's coming at it again. That's why he's so perfectly fit for this, because guess what? He's already tried to do it. And this is the one we talked about before, the one that people tried to give me heat for, where, yes, briefly, Hugo Chavez was unseated but put back in place, and it didn't ultimately work out the way they wanted to. Now, Abrams helped lead the U.S. effort as well to stage a coup to overturn the results of the 2006 Palestinian elections, complete with murder and torture. This is the new point man. Thank you, Mike Pompeo, for bringing in the new point man to help you with Venezuela. Just real gentleman, real gem from our U.S. foreign policy history. It's just like adding Bolton to the list. This is unbelievable and is a huge step in the wrong direction and says quite a lot about the current administration. Now, as many of you well know, the U.S. has a long history of interfering with democratically elected governments around the world, but specifically in Latin America and Venezuela. You know, being in the same place, my point, but Venezuela specifically. It has sought to weaken the elected governments of both Maduro and Chavez. Now, some of the efforts The effort has been in distributing funds to opposition groups through organizations such as the National Endowment for Democracy, while some has been in the forms of just simple propaganda, both of which we're seeing in spades right this moment. And that's something, again, that we need to recognize the comparison between then and now. As I pointed out before, Alan Weinstein, who drafted the legislation establishing the NED, said himself that a lot of what we do today was done covertly 25 years ago by the CIA. That's in the Washington Post. Now, Mark Weisenbrot, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, said that for the past 20 years, it had been U.S. policy to seek a change of government in Caracas. This is right out in the open. And now they pretend that's not what they're trying to do. Mr. Trump's recognition of Mr. Guaido was the first obvious effort to undermine the government. Now, we can't ignore, of course, as I pointed out, the deal made with Russia to mine their gold. And 2 days later, I feel like that was the catalyst. This has been planned for a long time. But after that, they said, okay, well, we can't have Russia getting the oil and the gold. We need that for ourselves. We need to kick this thing off. As many have pointed out, I don't want to share the video yet again of Trump saying multiple times on record that it's all about the oil. It's all about going in there and taking their resources. This is his policy. This is not some 4D chess manipulation. This is what he said for decades. This is what he's doing now. It's very easy to see. Now, the U.S. National Endowment for Democracy, the NED, they own their own current webpage, actually admits to extensively interfering in every imaginable aspect of Venezuela's internal political affairs. It'll be right there in the show notes. This is in their own website. It lists about 15, 20 different things that they're currently doing to manipulate the government. Now, anyway, in addition to that, let's just go over the broader concept. Here's a list for you of the times we know that we know about. There's many more that the U.S. illegally overthrew or tried to overthrow a government just in Latin America. 1989, Cuba and Puerto Rico. 1903, Panama. 1912, all the way to 1933, Nicaragua. That's one that happens a lot, it seems. 1914, Mexico. 1915, Haiti. 1916, Dominican Republic. Actually, I shouldn't have included Haiti there. That was an accident. I was listing these. But 1916 to 1924, Dominican Republic. I'm thinking incorrectly. Haiti is right there in the middle about it. Anyway, I'm continuing on. In Latin America, I was thinking South America in my head. Latin America meaning including all of Mexico and the other areas, and Haiti is definitely in the mix. So 1915 to 1934, Haiti. 1916 to 1924, Dominican Republic. 1941, Panama again. Costa Rica, mid-1950s, Paraguay, 1954, Guatemala, again, 1954 is a busy year, Guyana, 1953 to 1964, Ecuador, 1960 to 1963, meaning that these things were ongoing, 1960s in general, Cuba, 1961, Dominican Republic, again, Brazil, 1962 to 1964, Dominican Republic, again, 1963, Cuba, 1959 to present, apparently, Chile, 1964 to 1973, Uruguay again, 1973, Costa Rica, 1970, 1971, El Salvador, 1979, again, where they backed the United Fruit Company, which we talked about before, and actually openly crushed a lot of democratic elections because they were going against what they were trying to accomplish, Grenada, 1983, Nicaragua, 1981 to 1990, Panama, 1989, Peru, 1997, CIA meddling apparently all the way until 2004, probably still to this day, Ecuador 2000, Venezuela 2002, we just talked about Nicaragua right now into the present, and of course, 2017 to now, the current crisis in Venezuela. Now, I guarantee there's more than that. And the absurd part of all of this is why they repeat themselves, like we talked about in Iran, you know, the Operation Ajax in the 50s, and then Iran fought back and took their country back in the 70s, and now that's why they're again trying to overthrow them. That's how this goes. It's all about control. Do you really think they continue to do this to these countries because they're trying to save democracy? As it's not even what this country has itself. As they back Saudi Arabia, an open authoritarian monarchy. And I saw Ro Khanna tweet about that, the absurd of hypocrisy there. And everyone just blasted, oh, what a Russian stooge. That's, I guess, the only thing they can think of. It's alarming. This whole thing to me is alarming how little people can sit back and recognize the reality of this history. And again, that's just Latin America. There are whole other lists. And by the way, I have three lists in the show notes you can look at for yourself where I got these from. There are a whole other list for all the other illegal U.S.-backed coups in the world. This is just Latin America. And without fail, The U.S. puts in a dictator in the place that they, once they unseat the government, whether democratically elected or otherwise, and almost without fail, it's been democratically elected governments. Now, they put a dictator in place that they believe they can control, which doesn't always happen. But of course, it's the exact thing they pretend to be fighting against. And then they put them in place. And then, you know, rape the resources of the country and control them as they have to this very day. Now, I hope some new people out there are getting the point that I'm trying to get across. At the very least, hope that you will stop and consider whether those who were involved in documented and verifiably criminal wars and subversions in U.S. history that at the time they aggressively lied about. Just think of they might, just consider that they might be lying to you now. Now, moving on to some other stories for the day, one that I thought was incredibly important that involves Syria. And, I don't know how long it's going to continue before we can recognize that we're probably not leaving Syria, even though that kind of like ambiguous time frame is just up in the air. But now coming from anti-media, Israel wants U.S. to keep troops at military base in Syria to counter Iran indefinitely, which is the point. Indefinitely, this is what they're asking for, as well as many people in our own government. This story is interesting. Now, as the Pentagon, and this is what we've talked about a couple times, and people scoff like, oh, you know, they need people to save people. They need to send troops to bring them home. But as the Pentagon sends right now a massive troop increase into Syria, which is happening, but apparently to simply, you know, just aid in President Trump's ordered troop drawdown from Syria. Maybe true. But, you know, as they're doing that, now administration hawks, as well as foreign allies like Israel, are arguing that U.S. troops need to stay in Syria's southeast desert along the Iraq border at Al-Tanf, saying, quote, they are the last line of defense against Iranian expansion in Syria and therefore must stay indefinitely. Indefinitely. That is right out in your face. Thank you, Bamboo, for the super chat. Now, Washington's initial justification, of course, for establishing the remote special operations outpost in this area, as we've talked about before, was to train local fighters to counter ISIS. Which, with anyone that's watched this show long enough knows what an absurd claim that is. However, Russia, of course, has accused U.S. forces at this very location and showed proof, as far as I'm concerned, of actually allowing ISIS terrorists to maintain a presence in the area in order to put pressure on Damascus. How many times we've seen them dance out of this area and the little pockets in the air, we've seen them maintain throughout the entire invasion. Weird how they attack Syrian forces on the other side of that, but leave this pocket tucked in right next to them. Funny how that works. Now, with the ISIS excuse, as I would see it no longer valid, as apparently they're defeated, the counter-Iran argument is being pushed extremely hard in order to convince Trump to keep a small U.S. island of occupation where Syria, Iraq, and Jordan meet, which is a very important geostrategic point. Now, you could argue, like it says, that I often think of this as a possibility. I'm on the fence about it, whether or not Trump is part of the whole problem or just being cowed by all of these really bad people that he's got around him, maybe even thinking that they're good people. People like Abrams, Pompeo, Bolton, Mnuchin, all these people that are, their history shows you all you need to know. And whether they're the ones pushing him in this direction, that's up for you to decide, ultimately. But you can see, regardless, that we're going in the wrong direction. Now, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is among, of course, the foremost foreign allies pushing really hard and, quote, has repeatedly urged the U.S. to keep troops at Al-Tanf, according to several senior Israeli officials that actually spoke with Bloomberg. Now, the author finishes by saying that both Washington and Tel Aviv's past decade of Syria policy has been driven by fears of this so-called Shia Crescent, or the Iranian land bridge they talk about, which could conceivably connect Tehran with the Mediterranean via pro-Shia Baghdad and Damascus in a continuous arc of influence. However, the much hype, which it is, the land bridge idea, is somewhat nonsensical, given that Syrian allies, Iran and Iraq, can and have simply fly both personnel and weapons into Syria anytime they want. So it just seems like this made-up concept that seems to stick with people. Certainly it matters, but it's not as all-encompassing as they make it seem. It's more about simply maintaining a presence in Syria and all the other agendas they're trying to accomplish there. Now, the internal administration debate, following incredible pushback after Trump's withdrawal decision, or his claim to do so, has made entirely visible the national security deep state's attempt to actually check the commander-in-chief's power, the power of President Donald Trump or whoever's in that office. And clearly they're doing so. And now U.S. presence in Al-Tanf represents, as the article puts it, the last hope of salvaging the hawk's desire for permanent proxy war against Iran inside Syria, as well as other agendas that I could list. But you can clearly see this head-to-head battle and ask yourself whether it's, you know, it's relevant when Trump will say something and then Bolton will say something and then it goes with what Bolton says. I find that quite revealing. But again, think for yourself on this. Now, speaking of staying in Syria, I found this article incredibly relevant to this topic from today, from South Front. U.S. Special Forces enter Syria to hunt besieged al-Baghdadi. You know, that guy that's apparently been killed like 11 times, which I always find humorous. The mainstream media jumps, oh, Baghdadi was caught and he's killed and game over. And then a week later, we find he's got somewhere else. I mean, whether he's this new, bin Laden's kind of case where he seems to get younger with the, you know, whether he exists at all, whether the CIA asset, like it's kind of the same situation where it seems like he continues to reappear, even though they claim he was caught or killed or captured. Or I've seen it like at least 5 or 6 times since I've really been paying attention to this. And other people say it's many more, but they pretend, oh, we got him. It's dead. But now they're spending in more special forces, in addition to the other things we're talking about, on boots on the ground in Syria, U.S. special forces to get this guy. Interesting. Now, this unit of U.S. special forces has entered Syria from Iraq in order to hunt down ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, one of the founders of al-Qaeda in Iraq, interestingly enough, and later became the leader of the Islamic State in Iraq in 2010, both of which you can draw direct lines to the CIA and the U.S. government. Interesting how that works. So I wonder if there's a connection there. Now, the official said that the unit, which was deployed in a military base near the Iraqi city of Erbil, is likely to the same one which hunted and killed the al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden in 2011. So the same group, they say likely, that hunted down Osama bin Laden and, you know, kind of just weirdly disposed of his body. We never got to see all the questions therein are now the ones going after this man. But according to him, this was the first time the elite unit was sent to Syria. And even more interesting, he said, quote, the available information indicates that the U.S. Army wants him alive, al-Baghdadi. This may explain why a special force was deployed in the area that can be considered militarily defeated. He told this to a UK-based outlet. Why would they want him alive? I wonder why, when they've been trying to kill him for so long. I wonder if there's some kind of an intelligence asset there that they're worried about other people finding out about. Just a thought. Either way, more U.S. presence in Syria. Seems like it's only increasing, don't you think? Now, moving on to the final story, and this is a very important story that I thought, you know, and really, I really want you to come to your own conclusions on this. I definitely have my opinions about whether this was orchestrated or all of that. But regardless, I want to report on the story, but I won't be critical about this, but from both sides. Now, it's entitled, Enough! Pro-Macron Red Scarf Activists Bust into Paris to Counter Yellow Vests. So basically, there's a new opposition movement rising up to stand against the Yellow Vests. That's pretty interesting. And I wonder why it's only happening now. It's an interesting development, most likely. Now, first, it's definitely important to cover both sides of a protest, just like the media is refusing to do in Venezuela, showing you that there is, in fact, other people. Now, people involved in this, I'm not even claiming that these are all just, you know, not genuine. Because I guarantee, whether it's orchestrated or not, there are genuine people there that actually believe they're fighting for something they believe in, or just they are fighting for something they believe in, whether the agenda is kind of manipulated and orchestrated either way. I mean, you could say the same thing about certain factions of the Yellow Vest. People try to hijack these things. As you know, I think very deeply that the entire concept of the Yellow Vest movement is a very organic and real, genuine thing that we should be supporting. But to see this rise up, it just kind of like the hairs in the back of my neck stand up like there's something's off here. But again, come to your own conclusions. Now, thousands of pro-Macron climate activists, they call them, materialized in Paris on Sunday to counter the Yellow Vest movement during the 11th straight week of protests against the French government that the vast majority of media has kind of just completely ignored. Now, marching under slogans such as Enough and End the Violence, the Red Scarves and now apparently the Blue Vests movement have teamed up for their first anti-yellow vest protest in Paris on Sunday. Now, understand, not just countering and protesting something else, but anti-yellow vests. So they're actually protesting the protest movement of the yellow vests. really weird to me. Now, he says, quote, "We denounce the insurrectional climate installed by the Yellow Vests. We also reject the threats and constant verbal abuse suffered by non-Yellow Vests." This is according to the Joint Manifesto. It says, "The Blue Vest Movement was founded by 36-year-old legal expert Laurent Siegness," I'm probably mispronouncing his name, "and cropped up on Twitter in November to protest the blockades, the violence, the unjustified restrictions on freedom to come and go as you please, the attacks on freedom of opinion, under in parentheses, if you're not a Yellow Vest, you're wealthy or worse." Now, what's interesting there is this what, even if it's, let's just pretend for the moment that it's true. It could be, they could be just making this stuff up, but I doubt that that's a false. I guarantee there are people within movements like this, just like there are in this country, just like you have people that are aggressively pitted in the left-right paradigm, that will label an entire concept of people as a certain thing just because that's what they feel, right? If you're not part of this movement, then you're in shill, or you must be rich, which is just, you can't do that. Regardless of what side you're on, that's intellectually dishonest. So you can see why some average people might be upset by this. But the way this all went about, it definitely was to some degree orchestrated. Now, it goes on to say, in an interview with the Associated Free Press, which is interesting as well, giving them a platform, earlier this week, he said that he saw the creation of the group as a necessity because the Yellow Vest protest did not appear to calm down at all, despite the concessions made by the government to try to meet some of their demands. But the reason that's a fallacy is because this has gotten much bigger than just some of the minor demands they started with. And they weren't even that minor, to be honest, but it's become something much bigger, something that can't be placated by a couple of concessions from the oligarchs. Now, nearly 10,000 people ticked the participation box on the hashtag Republican March for Freedom. This is a Facebook page as of Sunday, while 27,000 said they were interested. Now, the group, launched in November over Facebook by John Christoph Werner, was created because French, quote, citizens are being penalized every day by the Yellow Vest methods, according to Werner. Goes on to say, on the group's website, multiple people recount how they've been verbally abused for not wearing the same reflective yellow vest that the anti-government protesters wear, how they have been forced to sign petitions calling for President Emmanuel Macron's resignation in order to get through roadblocks on their way to work, and how they have been accused of belonging to the Bourgogneese for not buying into the yellow vest demands. Now, you can understand why the average person would, you know, that may have confronted this, may not understand, or may have confronted the wrong group of Yellow Vest people that don't represent everything they're accomplishing. But this is what they do, is they manipulate people, if this is indeed orchestrated, which it seems like it was, at least by the Facebook group, to get people that are frustrated for reasons that they should be working with this group and finding common threads on why they should be fighting for freedom, not about little, you know, oh, they made me 10 minutes late to work. Screw this. I'm going to join this other movement. Now, I'm not trying to belittle their movement either. That's just the first thing that came to my mind. Now, interestingly enough, however, for those that may be balking that I'm even considering this as orchestrated, many of the red scarves were actually bussed into Paris. According to journalist Sotiri Dimpinodui, I can't remember that's the last name, it's Dimpinodis. He's the one that's been reporting on the Yellow Vest, the violence. He's doing excellent work, like constantly reporting on everything that's happening, not just in Paris, but all around the world for that matter in some things. But here's his tweet where he reports this. And this is just one, by the way. He's got all kinds of information and pictures of this, where he says, LOL, most of these people protesting in the hashtag March Republicans, well, that's in French, the, you know, Republicans March, what was it called? I can't find it now. Republicans March for Freedom. He had it listed in French. Aren't even from Paris, he says. They arrived via buses to Paris today. According to news sources, 5,000 people came from pro-Macron climate change march. So you see that there's a bias there, and clearly if they're busing people in to take part in this, this is an orchestrated, they're trying to combat the movement. But again, I can't say that for sure. It seems pretty suspect, but it's good to show both sides of the protest because there are both sides to any story we're talking about. But the one thing that stood out to me the most to finish for the day, the one thing that I really found suspect as we continue to point out how the media has, you know, intermittently covered small factions of this far from the front page, or covered how there was an explosion during one of these protests, but not really diving into what's really going on, Well, guess what? Now that there's an opposition that they can stand behind, oh, look who's come out of the woodwork. Yellow vests, opponents, gearing up for protests against France. Nice to see you join in, Washington Post. All of a sudden, now they're going to talk about it because there's something they can see. Look at, there's two sides to this story. Not just showing you how French people are standing up against the government, but that there's an, oh, there's opponents that think this is stupid, right? Trying to can show you that there's, you know, it's just, it's interesting to me that only now they decide to stand up at this. And there's a lot of places that are all of a sudden saying, oh, look, there's an opposition. Red scarves are standing up against the movement. All these people that have been silent about the movement this whole time. And well, actually, for clarity, there are some of these groups that have posted before, and maybe even more so, but in general have been largely silent, including the Washington Post, the New York Times, all these groups, about what's really going on. Ignoring the movement every weekend and, you know, putting a little thing here and there. But now, of course, they're getting coverage. Ask yourself why that is. Why all of a sudden the mainstream media just peaked up and said, oh, now we'll cover it. That should tell you something. That's my opinion anyway. As always, I hope you'll come to your own. Thank you all for tuning in today. I really hope some of this stuck with some people, and I hope it reached some people, not just about Venezuela, but about everything, about the reality that criticizing your government is your job as a citizen of any nation. You're supposed to question the actions of the people leading you. You can't just blindly acquiesce to whatever they tell you is best. People make people lie. People cheat. People steal. It is the nature of humanity. Maybe not everybody. I think that's kind of a stretch. I think everybody at some point does things that are dishonest, whether for good reasons or otherwise. But the reality is that it can happen. And so to blindly trust that they're just doing what's best for you, and then anything else is just un-American, is the propaganda in and of itself. And I really hope people can see that. That I truly believe what I'm doing is the pinnacle of what it means to be an American. And the people that argue otherwise are just being so blindly just lambasted by the propaganda that they can't even see straight. And those are the people that I'm trying to reach. And I really hope that they can simply entertain the information that I'm spreading out here and see that this history laid out in clear view of bringing these war hawk neocons that have been part of the same deceptions over the years about leaving countries in ruin, putting dictators in place, backing the worst people in the world, and then pretending that we care about this country. It's just disingenuous, and I really hope you can see that. Thank you all for tuning in. I love you so much. If you'd like to support this channel, you can do so many different ways. Link in the show notes if you'd like to buy a Question Everything t-shirt or a sticker like I've got right there. You can do so on PayPal or Patreon or on Bitbacker with cryptocurrency or straight up deposits to cryptocurrency, however you want, because we function because of you. No corporate backing, no ads, no. It's completely people-funded. Because of you. We could not exist without you. But as always, the most important thing to me is simply that you're here participating, asking questions, thinking critically, and spreading the information. I love you all. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.